7 FM, Lafayette, Lake Charles.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to The Exchange. This is Cheryl Castile. My guest in the studio today has been a favorite of mine for a long time, Michael Juan Nunez, who incredible songwriter, musician. And then today, too, we're also going to touch a bit on Michael as a visual artist, which we've never had a chance to talk about that. So,
I don't think so.
Welcome,
Hi.
Michael.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, and he has a new CD out, Rise, to find out more about that and where Michael's playing and everything. You can go to Michael Juan Nunez and make sure you get the N in the Juan and the N for Nunez.com. You can go to that website, and also Facebook's a great place to find out. So I'm going to start out actually talking to you about visual art, because that is a I love visual artists. And when did that come into your life?
Okay, people have been
asking me
about
that. That's probably been there
that.
For a long time,
It's
huh?
been there longer, a lot longer than the music. It's been there as long as I can remember.
Ah.
You know, but I'm not schooled
sure.
by any means.
Yeah.
It was always my my outlet, like to...
Like as a kid?
Yeah, as a kid. Yeah, man. I'd fill up tablets full of, you know, sketches and, you know... pastels, even if I get my hands on paint, you know, and make
yeah.
a mess. But yeah, I was always, you know, I can even remember in high school, we used to have Miss Mary Helen LeBlanc. She had a chalkboard on the side. And
is that an E-Rath?
Yeah, an E-Rath. And I'd draw on the chalkboard, you know, draw pictures on the chalkboard, sign it Picasso at the bottom. That was kind of... But yeah, man, it's always been there, but I never put anything out, you know, paintings, drawings, everything just kind of ended up in a pile somewhere, or I'd give it to friends, family, whatever, but never, like, sold it or anything. And I can't remember who it was, but when I had a painting and somebody offered to buy it, and it dawned on me, like, maybe I can do something with this. So I started posting on Facebook, and it's like, I was astounded, you know, like
yeah.
within a couple of minutes I'd get, you know, tons of hits, requests, like how much, and so, yeah.
That's a different feeling, I would think, that you experience when all of a sudden somebody offers, you know, money.
It's weird because I never, like I said, at that point I'd never let go to a stranger, you know.
Sure,
I always
yeah, yeah.
knew where my stuff was, and I don't know, it's different than music, for sure.
How so?
You know? I don't have the same attachment to the songs, or at least I should say, you know, I'm telling a story. The songs are always going to be part of me. I always carry the songs in me.
Yeah.
The visual art, you sell it, give it away or something, it's not there anymore.
Oh, yeah, that's interesting.
You know what I mean?
Uh-huh.
And it's so, yeah, it kind of freaks me out. You know, it's like I can't just
it's gone.
Access that thing anymore.
Yeah.
I could look at a picture of it, but it's not quite the same.
Sure, it's
know?
Not this. It's not
yeah.
the piece.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Okay, I didn't think about
it. And I don't, like, generate enough to have, like, I don't know how to say it. I do it whenever I'm inspired.
Yeah.
You know? And so I'll make a piece, and when I make it, it's like I put a lot of me into it, a lot of time and effort, so what comes out is really something from inside.
Yeah.
It's not just something I'm doing to sell.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
It's like something I'm my outlet for that. So to get rid of that, yeah, it kind of freaks me out a little.
Interesting. You know, there was a friend of mine, it's Christy Licky, who had done – there was a time when I had a shop and sold artwork, and she didn't have time to do a lot of pieces. So there were two that she had in there, but she said, you know what? I don't think I want to sell them. jacked the price way up. You know? And that afternoon, somebody came in.
I'll be done.
You know, and bought the one piece. And I quickly called her and I said, what do you want me to do? And, you know, then she took the other one out of there.
Well, because
and I think it was that same feeling that she wasn't producing a lot. And it's like, man, I just love what I just did there. You know?
And it's like I say, it's not like a, you know, I can put my songs on a CD. You can sell CDs, but, you know, I can make more CDs, and I can always access it, you know, through whatever, digital media, my computer, my phone, everywhere. So I can access my music.
Yeah.
I can't access that piece. And
interesting.
Like I said, if I was more of a commercial artist or something, and I was just doing it just for that, you know, oh, I got to paint a picture of whatever, a clock or, you know, even portraits. Okay, I'm doing it in here.
Yeah.
But it's not that, you know.
No.
It's like I get inspired. I put myself into it and really do something, and then, yeah. So it's,
it, and you know, I think that's a piece just from having friends that are visual art, you know, do it as a profession. That you know, that's something that they've had to work towards.
Yeah, I would imagine.
You know, is that feeling of that, you know, letting go kind of thing. You know?
I think, I mean, the people that pursue that career, you know, obviously probably had the same childhood I had, you know, with that, you know, they came up doing it. That was their passion. That's why they pursued it.
Yeah.
And then once they pursued it, they made a conscious effort to say, yeah, well, I'm going to be doing this as, you know, as a commodity.
Exactly.
I'm not like that.
Yeah.
You know? Very seldom.
Did you pay attention to album art when you were growing up?
Of course.
Yeah. Yes. I would think you probably really did.
Yeah, man. You know, I didn't buy a whole lot of records. I was in my teens, early teens, before I bought my first record.
Oh, okay.
And that was Michael Jackson Thriller.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Prior to that, I'd listened to my mom and dad's record collection and my sister. My sister had an amazing album collection. You know, all the Beatles albums, all the Stones, all of Zeppelin, everything, Peter Frampton, Blue Cheer, you
name it.
She must be somewhere in my age.
She's in her mid-50s
yes,
or so?
Exactly.
Okay.
In fact, she's married to AJ.
Oh, that producer.
So
okay, gotcha.
So he's known me my whole life, you know.
Yeah.
But yeah, I can remember listening to, you know, the Stones or whatever a little record player was jean jacket covered, you know, and pop up on the top, you know what I mean? I love it. And I'd listen to that in the room. And then I'd just sit there and stare at the album cover and listen to the music. And, you know, kids don't get into that anymore. They don't do that. But, man, I get lost in that world, you know, because the album cover always said so much about the content.
Yeah.
You know, and I think you can change people's perception who listen that way just by changing the art.
That's right. That's right.
So,
and, you know, the other thing that because we're going to talk about, you did the artwork for your latest release for Rise. But the other thing I appreciate, because not a lot of people do it anymore, is that you had the lyrics in here.
Yes.
And, you know, that takes you back to that time of laying on your back
exactly.
in your bedroom, holding the album up, pulling the thing out and doing the words.
I think of myself, you know, as a musician, I think of myself as a songwriter first.
Yeah.
I'm a songwriter. I always say I'm a songwriter who really loves to play guitar.
You know, okay.
But the past, I don't know how many albums has been. Well, since About to Snap, so two albums, I hadn't put lyrics in.
Yeah,
and you know, I see a trend now. You know, people aren't doing that. I mean, it costs more money to produce. You know, profits down, blah blah blah, all this stuff, but. I miss having, I mean, that's, again, it's kind of like that, the art, that's my craft.
Yeah.
And I want people to be able to read, you know, read the lyrics, not just, you know.
Yeah.
I want people to understand what the song, yeah. So.
Oh, okay. Well, that makes sense why they're in here.
Yeah.
Can you talk about how the art relates to the title, to Rise, to that, just the whole putting together of it?
Okay, so 3 years ago, we finished My Little Train Wreck.
Yeah.
And I already started writing and started demoing stuff. AJ lives in Austin, so I would...
Oh, AJ, your brother-in-law says they live in Austin.
Yeah, they live in Austin.
Okay.
So I would email him, you know, MP3s of demos I made, and I'm talking raw acoustic demos. He'd give me feedback on it, blah, blah, blah. And this went on for, I don't know, a year or so. And within that period of time, we amassed quite a bit of songs,
yeah.
Like 30 songs, 40 songs, something like that. Then we started saying, like, look, okay, we got all this material. What are we going to do with it? We were thinking about doing singles. We were thinking about doing an EP. Well, let's, you know, we settled on doing another album. We picked out the songs for it. I had a photograph that I had taken of a bonfire, and it just came out really strange. It looked like there was something in it, and I was freaked out by it. He was freaked out. It looked like a great album cover. So we had another title with that, and we worked the whole album thinking that this was going to be the title.
Huh.
This was going to be the album cover. As we recorded the record, we finished it. We mastered it. I've got the copy in my hand, and I realized that this album no longer looks like that album cover. It no longer fits that title.
Interesting.
You know?
Yeah.
So I'm sitting here with a finished product in my hand. The only thing that's stopping me from sending it to the press is we have no album art. We have no album cover. So I'm panicking. Like within a 2-week period, I'm freaking out. He's trying to calm me down. He's trying to give me ideas back and forth, this and that. And then he says, well, when you listen to the album as a whole, just stop and think about it. When you listen to the album as a whole, what does it say to you? Like, what's one word that you can use? And I came up with Rise. The 3-year period between Trainwreck and now, it really hadn't been the best years of my life, I guess you could say. We've had some, illness issues with my mom, some loss, family loss, and the guys too. The guys in the band, everybody seemed to be going through this really weird change thing. But we're on the other side of it, man.
Yeah.
You know, and I realized that we made it through all this, and making this album was really cathartic, you know. We could go into the studio, put all that away for a little bit, make music, and then be able to come back into the real world and deal with what we had to deal with. So it became like a sanctuary for me, you know. And I realized after all that has been said and done, we're still here. We learned a lot from that process. You know, adversity has taught us a lot. We rose above it, you know. There's that. There was the fact that we had, you know, a pool of, like I said, almost 40 songs, 35, 40 songs. The songs that are on there is what rose to the top, you know. The song Trouble, which was one of the centerpieces, one of the first songs that I wrote for this record, it deals with the passing of someone to the other side, you know, rising to another thing, you know. So there's several layers. I mean, we could go on and on, but there's several layers. And Rise seemed to be a really powerful title to put on it.
It is. And that it's interesting to hear that story, that there was a whole different, concept that you had for that album cover because, you know, you see and it's like this, you know, bird image going up. But just that word rise, that works its way through all those songs.
It does. Right.
Ah, that's very, very interesting. You know, when you're going through times like that where you have a lot of adverse things going, you know, when it's tough, does writing still continue? Is that an outlet or do you shut?
Pretty much shut down.
Yeah, I would think so.
Yeah.
Okay.
Writing doesn't. It doesn't come to me like during the happiest moments of my life.
Yeah.
And it doesn't come to me during the saddest moments of my life. It's more of a reflection thing, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I don't always do it, but I try to live in the moment.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So when things like that are happening, I'm not writing.
Yeah.
I write usually whenever. My favorite time to write is driving down the interstate. Is my favorite.
And
time
are you speaking into a phone then, or something? Or what
I
are you
have
doing?
I have tons of memos on my phone for ideas, but for the most part, I'll get into I'll hear a groove in my head. Especially like I said, you're driving and it's kind of hypnotizing.
Sure, yeah.
You get a groove in your head. You get lyrics start coming, melodies start coming. I'll compose an entire song in my head.
Yeah.
And once I got it, it's almost like I put it on a disc, you know.
Yeah.
Now I can go home and just sit down with an instrument and relearn it like I'd be, you know, sitting there with a CD player or a turntable. So I just relearn the song that I just made, you know.
Interesting.
And then I'll record it to keep it, you know, to show everybody else, because I can't, you know, just pop in a hard drive and, you know, give it to somebody else.
Exactly.
So I have to put it down for others to, you know. But that's, to me, that's my, the best songs do that. It'll come out all at once. I've written where, you know, I've got a few notebooks that's got pieces that I'll revisit, and I'll finish songs maybe a year later, maybe a month later. But to me, the best songs come out all at once, already done, bam, here it is. And the quicker the better to me, because that's like, oh yeah, we got some, you know. Might shave it down a little bit, sand it here, you know, put a little lacquer there. But for the most part, if it, you know, it's done. So
fabulous. Well, let's listen to Trouble. All right, Cecil. Track 4. We'll do that one. This is Michael Juan Nunez from his new CD, Rise.
trouble will find you.
Trouble, and that's from Michael Juan Nunez, his new CD, Rise. And if you just join us, this is The Exchange on KRVS 88.7 FM and KRVS.org. And another great way to find out what's happening here at the station is through Facebook, KRVS Public Media. Before we played that song, Trouble, we were talking about you and visual art and how you had to change the concept mm-hmm. of what this cover looked like. And folks can see it if you are near a computer. You can pull it up. But can we talk about the medium, you used to create?
Yes. Lately, I mean, I like to create with, a bunch of different things. Both my daughters are into art too, and I remember one night she came. We had to do painting with your opposite hand, you know, stuff like that. I mean, she's creative like that.
How old is your youngest?
My youngest is 15 now.
Is your oldest Jordan?
Yes.
Okay, and
she's at UL.
She's
18.
She's here at UL.
Yeah,
man.
Yeah. But this right here.
So she would come up with those things?
Yeah,
like,
yeah. That's just a little side thing. I'm just thinking about.
That's cool, though.
You were talking about medium, and I was just thinking, like, wow. For this right here, again, at the suggestion of AJ Dolphin, why don't you just paint? Don't think about it. Just paint.
Huh.
And let's look at what comes out. So over a 2-day period, I had a stack of like a heavy cardboard, like white heavy cardboard, and acrylics and a palette knife, because I wasn't used to working with a palette knife simply because of that. So we would select, and it was all done in basic colors. If it was either one color or two colors, period. That's what my limitations in my mind I set to do this.
Yeah.
So over a two-day period, I did like, it was like 20 paintings. It might be more than that, but it was at least 20 paintings over the 2-day period. And we'd photograph them. And I'm talking about, I mean, not detailed, but, you know, just like quick, bam, bam, bam. You know, lay a stroke down. What does it say? Oh, look, it's doing this. Let me, you know, so I'd finish it off to do this and rule on. We decided, look, this one right here stood out, you know, a lot. It was like, yeah, that's really cool, you know, just stark. At any rate, we took some good pictures of it, made sure it was documented, and then I promptly took the stack and threw them away.
Oh, Lord.
Yeah, I was not thinking at all about that. Again, you know, I wasn't thinking commercial. I was just thinking I had done all this stuff. We got the album cover. And if not that, you know what? We got some good pictures of the other ones. One of the other pictures I did, I posted on Facebook. And within minutes, somebody hit me back and was like, how much do you want for that? And I was just posting it because I thought it was kind of cool. You know, like an Indian head. How much do you want for that? Dude, I don't even have this anymore. It's gone. And that's when it hit me. I just threw away like over 20 paintings.
Yeah.
Bye.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah, it made me sick. Even this, I mean, I'd love to have the album cover, you know? But I wasn't even thinking about that. Because like I said...
Where is this?
In the trash.
Oh,
it's gone. Long gone. Yeah.
You didn't even save this one?
No.
Oh, Lord.
No,
Michael.
This was just picked out of like, you know, and again, you know, that 2 week period where I was sitting there with the master in my hand, but we didn't, I was panicking so much. Like, I need to find a title. We need to have an album cover. It's like, what the, am I going to do?
Yeah.
So I was so stressed about it that the art was like, you know, oh, we got the image. Bam, let's move on. Clear everything else to where we can move, you know, and that was just in the way. So in the trash and.
That's really
freaky.
Sad.
Yeah, sad. Stupid is what it is. That's a really good word, stupid.
Well, I don't know if it's stupid.
Yes.
But, you know, it's interesting. Like, Court, first thing that comes to my mind is like, okay, who wants to go dumpster diving and are we too late for
it's
that?
Way too late, you know. Look, this is the Indian head.
Oh, my gosh. Yes. Yeah. Michael, and that's nowhere to be found.
Gone.
Isn't that something?
And that's, you know, and it wasn't on canvas. And that would have been probably the other thing, because at least I probably would have reused the canvas.
Yeah.
It was on heavy, you know, heavy whiteboard. So.
Yeah. But, you know, it's interesting, though, because that wasn't just for the painting's sake. There was a purpose for
this.
There
was purpose, exactly.
You know, there was an – because it's –
there wasn't that connection.
Yeah. And, you know, I always think of – I don't know if you know Duncan Thistleway, Jeff's brother.
Yes.
And Duncan – did the most when I worked at CTA, does these incredible set designs for theater. And there were always places where, like, I wanted to live or somehow I wanted to stay connected to whatever that was. And at the end of a show, he would just go in there and start ripping that thing apart. And it broke my heart. And I remember talking to him about that. Like, how can you – but for him, although other people saw it as art, it served its purpose and it was done.
You know, you know? I have a friend, Rock Perkins, who's a what an incredible – like, he is what I would call an artist.
Yeah.
I just mess with paints. He's an artist. And he, you know, he told me – he's like, imagine all the masters, you know, that reused canvas, you know, probably painted masterpieces and then just painted over it, you know, because it was just something – it was an exercise that they were doing.
Yeah.
Or whatever, you know.
And now somebody would love to have it hanging.
Yeah, I'm sure they would. But it just happens.
It
you
does.
Know,
that's
you'll
right.
make more.
That's
it's
right.
that simple. And yeah, you see, I didn't have the connection to this.
Yeah.
It was a commercial item.
Sure.
It was, you know.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I didn't think about
that's
it.
That's really interesting, Michael.
Yeah.
Very interesting. Well, let's listen. Can we listen to Come Into the Light?
Ah, that's a cool tune.
Yeah, tell us about that song,
well,
how that came about.
That is to me one of the oddest songs that I've ever done, and simply because it's a pop tune and it's a happy pop tune.
It's very happy.
I say happy. It's an uplifting pop tune.
I mean, it is.
And
that's
strange for me because I'm usually in a, you know, I'm a happy person, but I write in a dark mode a lot.
Yeah.
It was just kind of a feel good song. You know what I mean? You know, I think I might have written that. I don't know. It was a few years back, you know, and probably, you know, raising my teenage girls, trying to give them advice about the world and, you know.
Very cool.
Yeah.
This is Michael Juan Nunes from Rise. This is Come Into the Light.
Come into the light, come into the light. Something's wrong, let's make it right. Come into the light, come into the light. The catalyst will create a spark and blow a hole through the dark so wide. Yeah, the fuse is set to ignite. Come into the light, yeah. You can't stop it any longer, it burns too bright. And I know you really want it, so come into the light. Just stuck in a moment and lost your fight. All you gotta do is put 1 foot forward. Come into the light. Come, come, come. I can see it in your eyes. Come into the light. Come into the light. You're getting tired of all those lies. Come into the light, come into the light. You've been praying with all your might for change to come. You don't care where from, no, but the time just never seems right. Come into the light. You can't stop it any longer. It burns too bright, and I know you really want it, so come into the light. Come, come, come. You're just stuck in a moment and lost your fight. All you gotta do is put one foot forward. Come into the light.
Michael Juan Nunez, and that was Come Into the Light from his CD Rise. And if you're just joining us, this – excuse me, I'm so sorry. This is The Exchange on KRVS 88.7 FM or on the web at krvs.org.
You all right?
Yeah.
It was
–
you see? It was so good, man.
Thank you so
Jesus.
Much. Sorry about that. choked me up. But we are a public service of the University of Louisiana at Lafayette right here at Cypress Lake Studios. And as always, a tip of the hat to everybody who continues to support us throughout the year. I'm going to take a drink really quick.
Man, that song choked you up.
There
I'm
we
so
go.
Sick.
Oh, I got tears rolling down my face. And I want to remind everybody that next week we do have our fundraiser, our spring fundraiser. So it'll be right after Festival International, which takes place this weekend throughout downtown Lafayette. You can go to the Festival International website to find out what's happening at every stage, one of the best things that happens in this area. And again, next week then we kick off with the spring fundraiser. You can donate at any time calling the station or just go to the website. We make it very easy. There's a red donate button. And then wonderful premiums that will be offered. And you can check that out on the website too. My guest today, who we are just listening to and who just brought all kinds of emotion within me that I had to that I had to take a moment. Michael Juan Nunez and has his new CD Rise out. It's interesting though, Michael, listening to you talk about that connection with the visual art and the music and just the different connections to an art form, you mm-hmm. know, and mm-hmm. whether like what purpose it if it serves the purpose of that you're there to create or it's there yeah. it is as an album cover, yeah. you know. And I think sometimes for people like – and I'm going to say myself because I'm a good example of that who aren't – I don't – my mind doesn't work in that way to create things to put on paper or – I mean I can play a guitar but I can't like create on it. You know what I mean? And so for somebody, that's when you hear that story about that you just don't even have those anymore. I think that's why there's certain people who react in a certain way because – to me, it's like, oh, my God, how much effort or work that took, and you know.
Well, that's the whole thing. I don't think it took, you know.
Yeah, it did.
It was work. It really was. It was part of the job for me, yeah. so I had no connection to it.
Yeah, you know? That's really interesting.
Yeah.
This CD the way that it was put together different at all in other ones that you have done in the past, the way it came together?
When we started discussing putting, like, okay, we had decided we were going to make an album.
Yeah.
All right, now what do we do? Do we take the band in the studio like we did with Trainwreck, where Trainwreck was basically the band that I played with, you know, Clint Redwing, yeah. Chad Willis, excellent musicians, both of them, for Trainwreck. We went into Tony's studio. We had rehearsed all these songs. We had played them live. We went in studio.
That's Tony Daigle, and he
yes,
worked on this
exactly.
one, too. Okay.
And basically cut them live in Tony's studio, you know. We overdubbed things, but the tracks themselves were cut. The three of us playing together.
Yeah.
This, we went back to a prior album, About to Snap, which is personally in my repertoire. If I had to pick an album, would have been like my pick for my favorite album that I've ever done. And I say would have been because I'm really proud of this record, Rise. Uh-huh. You know, uh-huh. And I can't remember ever being able to walk out of a studio and say that before, but I am.
Interesting.
But I, hindsight, About to Snap. Looking at it, you know, that was 2005, so 11 years later.
Mm-hmm.
I really liked that record. And what we did on that record was I would play tracks acoustic or electric. If I would play electric, maybe me and a drummer. And that's what it was, a drummer. It was, you know, Jeff Lewis, Dudley Frugier,
yeah.
Clint Redwing. It was like several different drummers, several different bass players, different, you know, well, keyboards, if Eric usually played the keyboard. But a lot of different musicians coming in and on different songs, recorded in different places.
Sure, yeah,
you know, so that the album, while it had a continuity where it was me singing and me playing guitar, the rest of everything else changed around me. So from track to track to track, it had different vibes, different feels. You could hear the air. You know, whenever you're listening to an album, where, and I say the air, you can almost hear the room that the musicians are playing in. And it works, I guess. I mean, Kind of Blue from Miles Davis is a great album to listen to. But the musicians are in this room for the entire album. I'm not Miles Davis, for sure. And there's a lot of people that aren't Miles Davis. And to me, sometimes those records can get pretty boring by the end of an album.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're listening to the same room, the same tones, the same everything. Even though they say, oh, well, I changed the guitar here, or I changed an amp here, or he's playing a different drum kit. Man, the room sounds the same. Everything sounds the same about it, you know. So we wanted to go back to this other thing. And what we did was, on several songs, I'd go into Tony's studio, me and a drummer. And on this album, it was either Clint Redwing or Mike Birch.
Yeah.
Both of them are phenomenal musicians. But both have their own way of doing things,
sure.
You know, their own style, distinctive style. And we would play together, just the two of us. We would play through the song together. And then we'd come back with overdubs. Or one of the tunes, the last song on here, Devil's Daughter, we cut at the band room in Erath. The band director in Erath High School gave us the band room for a day. So we set up, you know, the equipment there, and we recorded as a band in there.
Where did that come from? How did that come about?
Well,
where did that idea come from?
Well, my girls are in – Jordan used to be in band. You know, she was in high school
sure.
band 4 years. Allie is still in band. I am involved in, you know, both Tammy and I are involved in the girls' lives, you know, during band season,
sure,
we're
yeah,
there
yeah.
all the time. So we have, you know, Kenny, the band director, is a good friend of mine.
And did you have a sense, though, of the sound or the feel of that room?
It was two things. One, where do I set up a band that I can crank it up and record? You know, I can set it up at home, but man, you know, that's putting my family out of the way.
Sure, yeah, yeah.
You know,
yeah.
they have to disrupt their lives and art.
Yeah.
Okay, we could set it up, you know. I don't know. You know, there's not a whole lot of places you can just say, hey, I'm going to set up a band and record. And then have the solitude, you know. You don't want people coming in and out. You don't want traffic. You don't want all this. So, I walked into there one day and was like, man, you know what? This would be the perfect place because it's got some soundproofing in it, but it's also a huge open place where you can get ambience. And yeah, we were looking, you know, he's let us in and we tracked that tune there. Couple of the songs, at least one, Lemonade, was tracked at the Bourne. Johnny Richard and Kathy's place.
That's got great acoustics.
Yeah, it does. And we went in to tear down. We do a Christmas show every year.
Yeah.
Well, we went in to tear. We don't tear down that night. Usually, we'll go back in. Just happened to be like a week later. And I brought some equipment with me. It's like, hey, man, before you tear down the drums, why don't you and I track Lemonade? You know. So we set up a couple of mics and track right there. And
there
then again, you know. Go to Eric's place. Eric has a vintage B3 sitting in his house. You're not moving this thing.
Yeah.
And I'm talking like vintage, mint condition, beautiful sounding, beautiful looking. So I'm not going to pull this out, bring it to a studio. I'm not going to sample something when I got the real thing right there. So we go to Eric's house, set up some mics at his place.
Yeah.
Track him doing the B3 right there, you know, or clavinet or Wurlitzer, you know. Go to Lee Allen's, man. And, you know, Lee Allen's, Zeno's
who did it.
Yeah. Lee Allen and Chad Willis played bass on here. I played bass on a couple of songs simply because I had the bass line in my head. Easiest way, you know, path of least resistance.
Yeah.
But songs like what we just heard, Come Into the Light, Lee Allen, obviously, that if you didn't hear that bass line, it's so freaking cool. He brought some really cool stuff. I mean, Lee Allen's an amazing player.
Well, as a musician, I would think that when you go into a different setting, that brings – you're going to get a whole nother feel out of what you're doing than you would in another
setting. If you're in a studio and the clock's running, you know, I know as a session player, I go into somebody else's session. I'm there to do a job. If I'm not nailing parts, it's taking me too long, I start getting nervous, you know. People are paying. There's money that's being, you know, if I'm in there even doing my part, I'm looking at the bottom line. It's like, man, I got two songs, you know, two more songs to go. We need to hurry this up. The time's ticking. Call Lee Allen up, man. Hey, look, I'm going to go to you. We're going to go to your house. Sit down on your couch. Relax.
Yeah.
You know, when you got, and sit there with some headphones on, got his bass, got the whole day to do whatever you want to do. That's a different environment, a different way of playing. A whole, you know, you're going to get more of him.
That's right.
What he is, you know. He's going to be more creative. He's got, you know, if you mess up, it doesn't matter, dude.
Yeah.
You know, I got the memory right here to get whatever you got.
Yeah.
So play whatever you want, man. Create something.
That's right.
And that's what everybody brought to the table, which is one of the coolest things about this record to me.
Yeah.
You know. It wasn't time secured. It wasn't structured. It was very much the musicians coming in and creating. And then I went crazy with it too, you know.
Let's listen to the Lemonade song, can we?
Yeah,
you were talking
man.
About that. What's the clavinet again? That's a
it's a keyboard type instrument. You know, it's a keyboard, but it's kind of like the bump, bump, bump.
Okay. You know? Yeah, that's what's getting that song. Okay, and that's your daughter Jordan playing that.
Yeah.
And then Eric's on
B3.
Hammond B3. Okay.
Yeah, man.
Clint's on drums and percussion, and then you on
I play bass.
You know, everything else.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, so that's a clavinet. That's what that – okay, interesting.
And, you know, during this period, I'm a big D'Angelo fan. It's weird, I know, because I go from Nine Inch Nails one day, but – D'Angelo had come out with Black Messiah, which I think is an incredible album, you know, and his prior album, too, you know, was an incredible album. But I love the way his vocals sit and the background vocals and the way they play around each other and stuff. So I, like, stacked several background vocals on here and, you know, this song was fun to record.
Yeah,
you know?
Very cool. This is from Michael Juan Nunez from his CD, new CD, Rise. This is Lemonade.
We'll be right back.
give it to you. Jobs is a horrible time. Heard from Sheriff Little that the cat hopped his tail off. Old little monkey on the street called Ryan. The cat took the money that he got from the monkey and spent it on a bottle of wine. And if you wait till Friday when I get paid, I'll send you every other dollar I made. If you want it now, well, I'm afraid. Trying to squeeze lemons out of lemonade.
Michael Juan Nunez, and that was Lemonade from his new CD, Rise. And who? Let's see, on Lemonade, who played? Yeah, that was your daughter, Jordan.
Yep. Clint Redwing on drums.
Eric on Hammond B3.
Yep.
Very cool. So you had, I'm curious, you talked about a number of songs that you had.
Mm-hmm.
Do you already start working on another one, or do you – you have, huh?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. We're planning – this is all plans, you know, but I do have demos. We're planning a VPB record with Clint
Redwood. Wait, a what?
VPB, the Vermilion Parish.
Oh, the Vermilion Parish.
Yeah. And also an acoustic record that AJ
has
been talking about forever. You know, this one right here started out when it started the demos, all these demos were acoustic, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
And it started out to be an acoustic record. But, you know, I was getting all these to play, you know, some electric guitar, I guess. And yeah, it turned more into a band record. But, yeah, we have an acoustic record kind of on the back burner. And I have several songs written for
it. That's very cool. Do you write on acoustic guitar?
Yeah.
Do? Yeah, yeah.
Well,
most
of the time I write in my head.
In your head, yeah.
And then, I have guitars, I'm sure, just like Blake.
Yeah.
Probably guitars all around the house. You know, and you just pick up a guitar. But I like playing acoustic guitar a lot, yeah.
That'd be great for you to do an acoustic CD. Huh, very cool.
Yeah.
Oh, that's good to hear. Okay, so you got a couple projects in the works.
Yeah, always. And then, you know, I work with Tony a lot on other people's stuff, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
Either engineering or as a guitarist, so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Very nice. Well, that's very cool. I want to mention again for people to find out what Michael's up to and where you can see him play is go to michaeljuannunez.com.
And that's J-U-A-N.
Yeah, that's you should say that.
I should because, yeah. You know, at least.
And then another N for Nunez.
Yes. Michael, J-U-A-N, Nunez, N-U-N-E-Z.
Yeah, .com.
Be surprised how many people see that and it's like.
Yeah.
Not so much in this area, but other places. Like Juan?
Yeah, exactly. Juan? That's right. We had a guy that I grew up with, actually. His last name was spelled that way, and they all pronounced it June. Yeah, Tom June. But it was actually Juan.
Wow.
Yeah, but that's how it was pronounced. You do have visual artwork on there, too, on your website.
Oh, yeah, yes.
Yeah,
yes,
so that's a great way to find that
Yeah,
out.
If you go to media, you can click on media, and there's a thing that will take you to, yeah.
Yeah, and you have some gigs coming up in the area?
We do. We'll have for Festival International, we're playing down on Vermilion Street, the Zoom Photography on Vermilion around the corner from Antlers, I guess.
And, okay. Yeah, yeah.
Anyway, they have a garage on the side of it. We call it the Zoom Garage.
Yeah.
We'll be there Saturday at 7 o'clock. And we'll be at Artmosphere here in town on the 30th.
And that's with full band?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, I think.
Well, your full band is three.
Three piece. Yeah,
yeah,
it's
yeah.
not a big, you know.
Yeah. Which is cool. I like that.
Sometimes, I mean, Eric will sit in with us a bit whenever, you know, whenever he's not playing with Roddy, we'll have some
gigs. How many years ago that you stopped playing with Roddy's band?
2005, 2006,
oh,
something
okay.
like that. Yeah,
yeah
it's
yeah.
been a while.
Was it before About to Snap or
about
while you were working on that?
It was during that period of time. It was right after maybe.
Okay.
Yeah, it was somewhere around right after, I think.
Okay. Yeah, you were a busy.
Or maybe it was 2007. It might have been even later.
I mean,
I
you
remember.
Think about, you know, what you're doing now, but and you think back to the. I mean,
oh,
you were
my
like
good.
busy.
Yeah, because we were playing. We were also playing as Zachary Richard's backing band.
Oh yeah!
So we were.
That's right.
The Hub City All Stars, you know, with Roddy, and then we were with Zachary Richard, and then I had my band. Yeah, we were.
And you had a family.
And I had a family. Yeah, man, we were kicking. We were kicking butt, dude. Wow. I guess I'm not so busy now that I think about it.
No, you are. No, but you are busy. But it's more focused on. Well, there he is.
Speaking of Tony Daigle,
come on in, Tony Daigle. Come on in. We'll get you first. You have 30 seconds, Tony. Tell us your life story. 30 seconds.
Not much to it, but, you know, that part. And then here.
You did a good job on this CD,
We love
Tony.
This. This is an incredible CD. As a matter of fact, you know, I told Michael Wan, I played it the other day. I put it on my system, and I was just wild. I wowed myself. He wowed me.
You wowed yourself.
He wowed me.
Yeah, yeah.
Incredible. Great disc, huh?
Yeah. Man, it's good to see your face.
Me too.
Huh?
Congrats on the new job.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much. So, all right, listen, we're gonna go out with Human, which I love. It's
human
one of my favorite
like
ones.
You.
It's the I know that's the best part. What feels like
yes.
be human like you. I hit the repeat button often on my CD player for this song. So, Tony, you did a great job. Michael,
thank
fabulous.
You.
You know, Michael, and I have to say too, when I first started this show too, you were one of the first people I had on.
He was really the first.
Wasn't really? Wow.
Yeah, isn't that a trip? Yeah, that was a trip.
Cool.
You were my first.
Well, yeah, I'm kidding. Well,
so very
we're
nice.
Glad to be back.
All right.
Look, before we go, accolades to Michael Wan on this record.
Very
absolutely
cool,
stunning
it?
Work on his part, really.
That's right.
It's brilliant.
It's very cool. We're going to go out, MichaelWanNunez.com. The CD is Rise. This is Human. Everybody have a good week.
Different it seems, just like all the rest. When you're at your worst, you feel like your best. When you look in the mirror at a face you once knew, does it feel like you're damned to be human like you? To get where you are, the battered and scarred, you threw up your walls and enforced them with bars. Bulls in your way were chewed up and spewed. You must feel like a god to be human like you. There's blood on your hands, a heart full of sin, and God only knows what you've done, where you've been. You lie to yourself to do what you do. I wanna know what it's like to be human like you. I wanna know what it's like to be human like you. Does it make you nervous to be in a room with murderous crows who think like you do? Take your disease, spread it around like the flu. How do you sleep at night being human like you? It's only a whisper, an echo of cries, the laughter inside as your cold heart dies. Eyes wide open, finally seeing the truth. Tell me what is to be human like you. I wanna know what it's like to be human like you. The pulse of your throat, the taste of your skin, the sex in your heart as it beats from within. The secrets you hold and taboos you accrue. I wanna feel what it's like to be human like you. I wanna feel what it's like to be human like you. To look so pale, to be dying within, to never know for a moment or two about what it's like to be human like you, about what it's like to be human.
Hello, KRVS listeners. Join us every Friday from 10 to midnight for The Fringe, all the best in underground sounds and so much more. That's The Fringe, Fridays from 10 to midnight on public radio for Acadiana, KRVS.
This is Public Radio for Acadiana, KRVS 88.7 FM, Lafayette, Lake